The sea can be calming, but never underestimate it.
Fueled by unstable air and moisture,
strong storms are created.
Strong winds blow.
Waves crash. Water overwhelms the land. Respect water's strength and power.
Welcome to Jamaica Bay. You're listening to Jamaica Bay, a podcast series bringing you stories of the people that work, live, and play in Jamaica Bay, New York City. I'm your host, Helen Chang, and I'm from the Science and Resilience Institute at Jamaica Bay and New York Sea Grant. Influences the lives of New Yorkers every day, especially those living on the edges of Jamaica Bay. While water can be gentle, around 100 miles of the shorelines of Jamaica Bay, inhabited by structures like seawalls, and behind those, communities, water can overwhelm the land.
There has been a problem with flooding around Jamaica Bay, and there's many places that flood, you know, some streets that flood, at least some parts of them every month. Every spring tide, or nearly every spring tide. And then there's maybe once a year, there's also neighborhoods where the streets actually get water on them, maybe a foot deep, you know, not necessarily impacting homes. But this has gradually been coming up, and because of sea level rise, there's been a slow rise in these floods over the past few decades.
I had the opportunity to chat with
Philip Orton. I'm a research assistant professor in physical oceanography at Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Philip Orton studies the movement and forces of water. He has worked in dozens of estuaries across the country, from Willapa Bay in the U.S. Pacific Northwest to Winya Bay in the U.S. Southeast, and currently in New York waters. But he does his research in an interesting way.
I spend a lot of time working in front of a computer, studying the ocean and estuaries. And my specialty is with computational modeling, so trying to recreate aspects of mainly the physics of the ocean and estuaries in a computer.
I asked Philip what modeling is.
Sure. Water is one of the more predictable things on the planet, unlike things like economics or climate, as a matter of fact. It's relatively well predicted. We know about how forces lead to movement of water, and there's some complexity there, but it is something that's fairly well understood, you know, going back many decades, if not centuries even.
That's true. We know that water rises and falls at specific times of the day, every day. Known as tides, they are caused by the gravitational force of the moon and the sun, and by the rotation of the earth. We know the movements of the solar system, which then influences the tides. Therefore, changes in tide height and time are predictable.
A computational model of water movement is used to predict how the forces on the water lead to the velocity of the water, the movement of the water, such as tides or waves, wind-blown waves, how the wind blows up waves on the ocean. Those are some of the kinds of things that we can predict, and using a computer model is kind of a very detailed way of doing it, where you create a miniature, you know, a version of the ocean in a computer code that has many aspects of the ocean, and it can take a supercomputer, you know, it can take a lot of effort.
There are a lot of concerns with flooding in the communities surrounding Jamaica Bay. But Philip is utilizing the predictability of water and his modeling expertise to help.
My work has been mainly on flooding and on storm surge and tides and how they can create flooding and sea level rise also. So looking at how these things will change in the future. And actually I've done a lot of work looking at the past and how things have changed in terms of the landscape and tides and storm surges and sea levels over the past 150 years or so.
I took the chance to interject with a common question I get from people I encounter at work.
So you mentioned this term storm surge. Can you explain that in terms of, you know, waves and...
Sure, sure. A storm surge, by definition, is the wind blown, mainly the wind blown, or it's the storm driven increase in water level at the coast. And that's mainly driven by wind. It can also be driven by differences in atmospheric pressure. If there's very low atmospheric pressure during a storm, which is typical, then the sea rises up a little bit more. But mainly, and then also waves, wind-blown waves can also drive up water levels a little bit. But the main driver of storm surge is the wind.
Storm surge is different than being tossed by a wave. It's the abnormal rise in seawater levels that typically happens during strong storms or hurricanes. During these times, water is pushed up onto the shore and can be extremely tall, powerful, and dangerous. With his work in computational modeling, Philip is looking at how water moves and examining the threat of flooding from storm surges, rainfall, and sea level rise to coastal communities surrounding Jamaica Bay. He has also created tools to help forecast flooding in local areas and demonstrate how the added threat of sea level rise will impact storm-driven flooding.
So all these things you have to model together, right? So I guess how water moves, the land, how wind drives the water.
True.
Is that really difficult to kind of balance all of these factors?
It's not easy. I mean, I spent this whole weekend working on this kind of stuff, so yeah. It's not a 9-to-5 job on a computer, unfortunately. Not my average weekend. Yeah, so computer. It's tiring. I mean, it is complicated and difficult, but I feel like at the same time I enjoy doing work that impacts society, and this work has a little bit of a creative process in it too, and I enjoy that. But yeah, there's a lot of tedious work with developing computer models and making sure they're accurate before you trust them. But it's not so difficult.
Philip explains that while the movement of water is predictable, the natural environment has lots of randomness and uncertainties. For example, the weather.
And so sometimes we'll not just run the model with one wind forecast for storm surge, but we'll run it 100 times with 100 different wind forecasts that try to represent all the randomness of the weather. Increasingly, scientists are getting smart to that and providing an uncertainty by putting all the uncertainty into their predictions and not acting like there's only one possible future.
So thinking about the uncertainties first before kind of what you hope the result to be or what you hypothesize.
Right, you don't want to get too caught up. And so with my modeling, computer modeling of something hypothetical, I'll try to understand the theory behind why it works and look at it from that angle. I'll use the computational model and look at it from that angle. I'll also try to use somebody else's computational model that's set up differently, and there are different models that have different formulations. And so you do want to try, and I should do it even more than I do, but you do want to try to get many different perspectives on the same question.
Philip doesn't spend all his time in front of a computer. He's gone out to experience Jamaica Bay.
I went straight bass fishing on a charter boat once with a couple friends, and that was a lot of fun. I don't think I'd ever caught a fish in my life. I'd lived on water all my life, and anytime I picked up a fishing rod, I think I was the least gifted or least patient person at fishing. But they basically, on these charters, the guy put they caught menhaden and with a net and used them as bait, and basically the striped bass would just swallow them whole, and then you'd have the striped bass on your hook. And so it was pretty foolproof.
Awesome.
And immediately, literally the first time the guy handed me the rod, boom, I got a hit and pulled up the striped bass.
How big was the striped bass?
I don't know, a couple feet long. I mean, they're very
wow.
big fish.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. I mean, beyond that, though, I'd say since I'm kind of a people person, in addition to being a computer person, and I spend so much time in the office and in front of a computer and working with numbers, that probably my true most significant experiences around Jamaica Bay have been going to events around the bay with Rebuild by Design, with Science and Resilience Institute.
With his models and ability to provide numbers to questions, Philip can start to address management challenges that would influence entire communities with the risk of coastal hazards.
I think when it comes to answering questions about adaptation to hazards like flooding or climate change you know, and sea level rise. I think there's a lot of opinions and a lot of people who advocate for things, but there often hasn't been a lot of quantification of the different alternatives. A good example of that is wetlands. Everybody wants to see wetlands restored in the bay, and wetlands serve a lot of positive functions, such as with ecosystems and fish. And at the same time, we found all along that wetlands in the center of the bay don't reduce the storm surge driven water levels and flooding of neighborhoods around the bay. And we found that with a few different studies. What they can do, however, and we've quantified also, is that they can reduce wave heights. And that's one thing that I came into this whole conversation around Jamaica Bay with the tools to address quantification. And so one thing I really am happy I can help do is to try to provide numbers on things. I've been at events around the bay where there are a lot of people, a lot of locals, and just hearing people's stories and actually seeing people and learning about different kinds of people around the bay, because there's so many people, and it's such an important bay in terms of a big population of hundreds of thousands of people who live nearby. And it just, I don't know, it always kind of warms my heart to meet all the different people who are interested in the bay.
Thanks to Philip Orton.